What's happening, y'all? Welcome to the podcast. Do me a big old favor and hit that like and subscribe button if you want to hear more content like today's guest, the biggest hunter in the wild, a South Carolina game warden. Today, we're going to talk about what it takes to become one, all the way down to what you pass along to the next generation. We're going to talk to wildlife officer, Mr. Mark Farrell.
You know, what you need is some of that hysterical perfect. You know what I mean?
We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Oh, yeah. That's a powerful new force.
Mm-hmm. Think of it, Junior.
I guess the first thing is what everybody wants to know.
Right.
Is where the heck are y'all hiding Bigfoot?
No kidding. if we get a trail cam picture of him, I'll let you know.
Yeah, all right.
So far, he hadn't showed up.
Well, dude, I appreciate you coming to hang out with me.
Yeah.
It is, it's the season, mm-hmm. right? So I was like, man, I was when I thought about trying to keep up with the times, you know,
yeah.
try to keep my podcast a little relevant. I thought about you a couple, like when I first started doing this, I was like, man, I'm gonna hit Mark up and
yeah.
See about him coming and talking to deer season. The next thing I know, we're in the freaking rut and everything already.
I know.
I mean,
you know I love you because I missed a deer hunt to be
really?
Here.
Really?
Yeah.
You know,
no,
and
I'm just
kidding.
I like hunting afternoons, but it's cool. I'm just picking.
I was like, well, it's about after dark, you know.
That's right.
I was thinking that, too. I was like, I'm telling him. I said, I done messed up and told him I had to reschedule on a Wednesday to a Thursday. I was like, he's probably livid right
no,
now.
No, I made it to the woods, man.
Yeah.
Had a good hunt. It was fine.
That's awesome. And, man, that's got to be – you got the unfair advantage, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I work a lot of weekends, so mm-hmm. that's – you know, so and we work a lot of holidays.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a great job. But what I was going to kind of do, if it's cool with you, I was going to kind of just tell about how I got into this
no,
job.
No, send it, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a hunting family. My dad raised bird dogs, and so we were always, you know, going to field trials where the dog has to point. It's got to do certain things,
yeah.
and it gets trophies based on how it does. I loved it, but I was, for some reason, even as a little kid, I was infatuated with deer and turkey, the fact that they lived right here among us. And I don't know, it's kind of weird, but I just thought that was cool as heck. These creatures lived out here.
Right.
And I wanted a deer hunt so bad. So when I was probably 12, 13, me and my dad got checked on a dove field by a game warden. And I'm like, Dad, that's what I want to do when I grow up.
That's
like a really cool job, you know. Most people hated game wardens, you know, a lot of people that I went to school with. Sometimes had a negative connotation, just, you know, being checked.
Right,
we police a recreation.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to do that. I go back to our Clover Junior High School, where you mm-hmm. also went.
Yep.
On a computer that was as big as this chair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, typed in, what do you have to be a game warden? It's like, you got to go to college. I was like, man, I didn't like school. Fair. And I'm like, how am I going to go to college? So if that's what I got to do, that's what I got to do. So I wind up going to USC.
There we go. Go
got a four-year degree in criminal justice and also an associate's degree in criminal justice. And I get out of college. The wildlife department isn't hiring because they don't hire every single year. So went to work at the York County Sheriff's Office and worked there for 4 years here in York County. And I learned a lot. It was a great experience. The wildlife department started hiring again.
Yep.
I put in, got hired here in York County, which is –
Well, that's one of the things I was
cool.
wanting to know is how that popped off. How'd you end
right.
up?
So a lot of times they'll move you to different counties based on
need.
Different factors.
Yeah.
If there's a need in that county for an officer, if there's an opening in a county. Also, from experience, it's kind of weird when you police an area that you grew up in because you do wind up running into people that you grew up with or
right.
church with or whatever. So
yeah.
that can sometimes be kind of an awkward
situation.
But anyway, since I'd already been in law enforcement, that kind of factors into, you know, well, you've already had to deal with some of that situation
mm-hmm.
probably. So I was able to get York County, which is good, and have to sell my house or anything like some people have to do. So I got here in York County and I worked the field, you know, we're out checking hunters, checking boaters. We got Lake Wylie, nice body of water, very crowded with boats, as
yeah.
y'all know.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of people around here, and a lot of people like to have boats.
Yeah.
We got the Broad River and Catawba River also to keep up with. great county to work. There's a lot of hunting activity on the western side of the county and even in the urban areas of this county. So kept us busy in the field. At the time, there was just three of us. Now we have, I think, five wildlife officers in York County.
Five in York
yep.
County.
In York County. Yep. Yeah. So around 10 years ago, I was able to put in for this position that I have now, which is kind of what I was going to talk about a little bit, and then we may can go back to some other things with the job.
Listen, I'm glad that you're doing all the talking.
Okay, all right, cool. I'll try not to talk too much here. So when you get hired, you have to go, if you haven't been to police academy, you have to go to police academy like all police officers in South Carolina have to. We all go to the same police academy. If you're a wildlife officer, you also have to go to additional training wildlife school. And we have boating school, and then we have the wildlife section where you learn how to, you know, enforce game and fish laws. Boating laws, we operate different boats. We go out in the ocean, do different things, because we also work in the ocean too. Officers that work the coast.
What is the wildlife part like?
When I was in the wildlife school, we went to Charleston to the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, FLETC, and we trained there. We stayed in barracks, and we operated various different types of boats. We practiced boat stops because, you know, stopping somebody on the water is a whole lot different than when I was a deputy or a trooper and you're stopping somebody in a very controlled environment on the side of the road.
Right.
So when you stop someone on the water, you've got waves, you got wakeboard boats coming by you.
You got water.
You got water, exactly. Yeah. You're moving the whole time. So I'll stop your boat and I'm trying to, you know, hopefully I got a partner with me. Most of the time you do. Sometimes you're alone. You got to hold on to that boat. While you're checking and talking to the passengers of this boat and the captain of this boat, make sure he's all good to go. And you're checking safety equipment while the boat is floating and bouncing around. And you got to make sure now your boat that you've stopped, they're not operating their boat anymore. So they're paying attention to you. You may be floating into a dock. So you got to keep eyes on everything while writing a ticket, possibly while maintaining being safe in case this is a bad guy or something, or something crazy is going on.
And
keeping them safe so they don't get hit by a boat. And, you know, all kind of things happen. And those all scenarios have happened to some of our officers while you're on the boat stop getting hit and different crazy things happening. So we practice all that stuff at wildlife school. And it's important that you do because, it's a lot to keep up with. So we operate different types of boats because if we're on rivers, Catawba, Broad River may be in a jet drive, like duck hunting style boat, tiller steer boat. Lake Wylie, most of our officers are in like 19 or 20 foot center console boats with T-tops on them.
Yep.
So we got a little bit of shade. Also on the water, compared to an air-conditioned car on the side of the road, you're sweating. It's hot. Everybody else is in bathing suits and they get to jump in the water. We don't get to do that.
Wow.
And you got a gun belt on and it's hot. But that's the job. So that's the kind of stuff we go to wildlife school. We're practicing stops. We are, conducting, somebody's under the influence, you got to practice doing your field sobriety testing, all that good stuff. So that's kind of the boating side of it. And then the wildlife side is just most people we hire are avid hunters, outdoorsmen, fishermen, boaters, that kind of stuff. Some people that we hire are not. So at wildlife school, we have to start at a very, very elementary level of teaching everybody everything.
Yeah.
So I'm not in our training staff, but I do help as a guest instructor at our wildlife school now, teaching different things, identifying different seeds, different hunting scenarios that they may run across, dealing with people, that kind of stuff. So our wildlife school is kind of fun. It's a whole lot different than the police academy is. Police academy is really not that much fun, but it is a very important part of our job.
I mean, it kind of sounds fun.
I mean, it's fun, but it's a lot of classroom part at the police academy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Our side is a little bit of classroom, a whole lot more hands-on when you get to wildlife school.
Okay.
Because we're actually out doing scenarios a lot of times. So back to when I was in wildlife school. The guy who had my job, my predecessor at the time, he came to our wildlife school, and I'm a young wildlife officer, 26 years old, 27. And he gives this presentation about he's taking kids on hunts. And it's just slide after slide of him with deer, turkeys, kids that are, some have some medical problems, different illnesses, whatever. Some perfectly healthy kids. He gets through this presentation, and his name is Linwood Kearse and Mr. Junior Matthews, both great men, and both retired now. He gets through, and I remember during the break, I walked to him. I said, so you're telling me they pay you to take people hunting? That's your job as a game warden? He said, yeah. I said, man, I really want your job one day. I said, no, I'm just started. You don't know me.
Yeah.
So I feel like, this may sound crazy, but my whole life's been set up for me to do this job now. Yeah. That's how passionate I am about this job. So fast forward, I'm working in the field for 9.5 years, almost 10 years. Mr. Linwood retires. I put in for this job. And I go on my interview, you know, and I'm, you know, I hunt deer, turkey, duck, squirrel, dove, everything. While I was in the field, working in the field as just a field officer for those 9.5 years, I set up a lot of youth hunts on my own in this area here, here, York, Chester, and Lancaster. Kind of trying to build my resume for potentially this job one day. And there was other good applicants that had put in also. I got lucky and I got the job at the time.
Yeah.
Since then, back up for the past 10 years, that's what I do. My job is to take people hunting. So when I was a little boy, I wanted to be a hunting guide or a game warden. And now I get paid to do both.
Wow, dude.
So, I mean, you know, can't get much better than that.
And I mean, I look at that job as, that's another reason I wanted to talk to you. Mm-hmm. It's not just because it was hunting season and everything, but it is a very cool job, and I'd like to know more about it. But it seems like every day is an adventure.
It is.
I mean, I sell cars and I'm at a dealership all day, but I've ran a drill press before.
Yeah.
And I'm not that guy.
I can't do the same thing out there. No.
You know, so, I mean, I walk a lot and everything, but once you get to talk to somebody, it's all action and fun.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, I am not a drill press guy. I love what you do.
Right.
I think it's a really cool
thing. Well, the great thing about being a game warden is, every day, just as a field officer, every day when you leave your driveway, you can decide if you want to go left or right, you know, depending on what's in season.
Yeah.
If it's duck season, you're going to be out early in the morning. If it's, you know, deer season like now, you're going to be early in the morning, late nights, working a lot of hours, a lot of weekends. You know, hunters and fishermen and boaters, they operate a lot on the weekends and a lot on the holidays. So you have to work a lot of those times. So the hours are not the best, but they're different from when I was at the sheriff's department or other jobs where if you work 9 to 5 as a game warden, you're not going to catch anybody or do any good.
Right,
you have to
work
when hunters are out, fishermen are out, boaters are out, and that all. The cool thing about the job, more than anything, is every 2 or 3 months it changes because you go from dove season, deer season, duck season, squirrel season's in, small game stuff. Duck season kicks back in full swing really in January, you know, when really people start duck hunting hard. Then you get kind of, as of in the field, it's kind of a little lull there before turkey season. Everybody's gearing up for turkey season, but people are starting to fish a little bit on those warm days. So you may have to hit the river or the lake a little bit.
Now, how would you kind of go about your day? How does that?
It just, like I said, it just depends on what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's pouring down rain, about the only thing goes on in really monsoon rain, people duck hunt. They don't care. They're going to be duck hunting. If it can be the worst of weather, the better the ducks fly.
Yeah.
You know, if it's, you know, rabbit season and it's monsoon and rain, there's probably not going to be any rabbit hunters out in February. So those days, we have a lot of online training we have to do.
When,
you know, with any job, you have training that you have to keep up annually. So there's time where you can do that kind of stuff on, you know, computer type work. Now, since I've been out of the field for a while, we have a whole lot more officers in the field have a whole lot more paperwork to deal with. Most of your tickets now are written on an iPad and printed out compared to old school where you hand wrote them.
I had two questions prepared, the Bigfoot one, and this is the other one. What is it like to, I mean, to me, game wardens are got to be some of the baddest dudes out there because you are going half the time, you're going to find someone who is definitely armed.
Right.
And heavily armed.
Yeah.
And hiding
already.
And so, I mean, that's...
It is a little sketch.
It was a big transition
for me coming from the sheriff's office to where if I encounter somebody with a gun at the sheriff's office, it was, you know, usually pretty bad.
Right.
I would have my gun also. Then I become a game warden. Every single person we deal with has got a shotgun or a rifle, and most fishermen have pistols, and that's perfect. That's perfectly legal, and that's great.
Yeah.
I think the big difference is the situations that we're in.
So what I was kind of asking is they train you a little different, right?
They do. And it's definitely a transition, you know, for somebody that hadn't never been in law enforcement before, it probably wouldn't be as big a deal transition. Yeah. Besides being at the police academy and what you learn at the police academy is going to make you be more aware of things. But the people I would say that we deal with, 95% of them, you hunters and fishermen or boaters, and this is maybe be 99% of them. Mm-hmm. They're good people. They're hard workers. They're people. If you can afford to have a boat,
yeah,
a jet ski, if you can afford to have a nice Z71 truck,
yep,
four-wheeler side-by-side, pay a hunting lease, own your own property, be in a hunting club, tractors, planting food plots, doing all that stuff, you are probably work at Duke Power, school teacher, got a good job, you got a family, you go to church on Sunday. You know, we deal with great people in our job. We police the recreation. So the people that we're dealing with, although they may be mad sometimes at what we're issuing a ticket for or whatever is going on, most of the time we're fortunate we deal 95% of the time we're dealing with good folks, you know. Yeah. So I think that's the difference.
Okay, now I see what you're saying. Yeah,
as opposed to responding as a deputy or your city officers out here to a hornet's nest every time they go somewhere or something. They're getting called to something bad a lot of times. Most of the time we are just proactively enforcing game and fish and boating laws.
So you work directly for the South Carolina DNR, right?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
And how does the wildlife management part play into it?
Right. So we have a very big agency. Most people don't know how big it is. And I didn't know how big it was till I came to work here. We have some of the best people in the world that we work with too. We have a law enforcement section that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
We have, I'm going to miss some sections here. Somebody's going to be mad at me, but we have a wildlife section. That's the main split, I would say. Our wildlife section manages our wildlife management WMA properties, our heritage preserve properties, and they are awesome people. They're biologists, they're technicians, and they are out. If you've ever visited Draper and taken pictures here in York County of sunflowers where everybody goes to get their pictures made in August, you know, those, and at Worth Mountain. Those guys are preparing our properties and making them nice. We have over 1 million acres of wildlife management property here in South Carolina, so we have a lot of people that staff those properties and manage them so that they're doing prescribed fire burns out there for the timber and the wildlife. They're planting food plots, they're keeping roadways opened up, trees falling, all kind of stuff. We also have a fisheries section. They're managing our waters, our fisheries in the waters that we have here in the state.
Really?
They shock fish. They do some shocking, you know, and then they do like krill samples and see how the fish, the health of the fish, age of the fish.
That's kind of a neat job.
I've gone with them a couple times. Pretty awesome day too. Those guys have a really awesome job.
Yeah.
One part of my job is recruiting new officers. So I'm going to touch on this.
Oh, cool.
If you're a young person listening and you want to be outside, and you don't really want to be in law enforcement, we got some really neat jobs where you get to be outside every day and you don't really have to be a biologist. We have, like I said, technician type jobs. Basically, they are biologists. They just don't have the title as a biologist.
They're out there doing the dirty work.
They're doing some dirty work. They're getting their hands dirty, but they are seeing some beautiful places.
Mm-hmm.
They work in some awesome environments, and we literally have the best staff because I think everybody's happy.
Yeah.
If you go around and you visit any of these places and you talk to somebody, if you see somebody in a green truck, I think most of those are our fisheries guys. Mm-hmm. Gray trucks are usually our technician people who are wildlife section people.
Yeah.
And then we also have archaeologists, we have geologists, we have weather people, we have mapping people, our agency is huge, man, and we have a lot of people that work out of the Columbia office, Charleston office. We have saltwater, you know, people who focus on saltwater stuff, you know, turtle biologists, bat biologists, pretty much anything you can think of in our natural resources. We have a job probably all the way down to clerical type jobs working in the office.
No, I mean, I would love to have went to it, but now I'm like just a super great car salesman.
Yeah, you got to stick with what you're good. You're awesome. You're doing a great job.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any car salesmen in that.
Well, we do buy a lot of fleet vehicles.
Yeah,
so well, there you go.
There we go.
We come see Fred Caldwell.
Yeah, Fred Caldwell Chevy, baby.
That's right.
But no, dude, it is. I'd love to have done something like that, into an adventure. But you got a really cool gig because you get to do a lot of hunting.
That's right. So back to the tow mode part. Let me get back to that because that's mainly my spiel and my job. So I got this job, Take One, Make One is what it's called. I call it TOMO. That's the acronym for it. Mm-hmm. But it's basically what it means is taking kids on their first hunt, teaching them values that last a lifetime. That's what that's what it says on the back of my truck out there.
Really? Now, that was your thing or was that it the didn't guy come before?
Up with
that?
I believe my old lieutenant, Kim Leverich, came up with that little quote, I think, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But the Take One, Make One program has been part of DNR for even prior to Mr. Linwood Jr., Mr. Bob Redfern, who has his own outdoor magazine show now. He was, I believe, the first Take One, Make One coordinator back 20-something years ago. So what we do is we take youth who are 12 years old mm-hmm. to 17 years old, who don't come from a hunting family or hunting background.
Yeah.
So non-hunting families is a key there. If you fit that category and you'd like to go hunting, get in touch with me. Very easy to get a hold of me. You have to first take a hunter education course. Mm-hmm. That's required. So once you do that, then you can fill out a Take One, Make One application. You can do that on our website. Easy to find. Click under Hunter Ed, Take One, Make One link, and fill out application. Once you send that in, there are four coordinators like myself. So I'm in, doesn't mean anything to most people. Our state is broken down into four regions so that we can keep up with who's got what areas. So I kind of have like the upper Piedmont out towards kind of like Chesterfield, Marion, Williamsburg, all the way out that way. I've got a bunch of counties. My partner, Robbie Barnes, has kind of the Midlands area,
mm-hmm.
Region 3. Brandon Gardner has kind of like Union County all the way up to Clemson, Edgefield, all that over there, the mountain area. Elise Steele has the low country, all the way like Charleston, Jasper, Hampton, Georgetown, that whole area down there, Colleton. So we all work together. Depending on where you live, that doesn't mean that's the only place you get to hunt.
Oh, okay.
You can be anywhere in this state in about 3 hours, which is awesome. And I get to drive all over it and see beautiful properties.
Yeah.
So we do deer hunts, turkey hunts, duck hunts, squirrel hunts, rabbit. No, we don't do rabbit anymore. Dove, turkey, deer, squirrel. I think that's about it. We pretty much have a hunt every weekend. We provide, if you need camouflage, if you need boots, if you need anything, we can get anything you need. I have a whole lot of stuff. I got like a Bass Pro Shops in the toolbox of my truck. I got a big toolbox on my truck. We also provide the firearms for the youth. So all they basically have to do is the parents need to bring them to us on whatever day we say, hey, your son, Jimmy, is drawn for a hunt on October 3rd. Meet us here at 2 p.m. We usually have some light snacks. We'll have dinner sometimes. We may shoot some rifles, shoot some shotguns, whatever we're hunting that day, whatever species we're hunting for dove hunt. We may shoot some clays before the hunt. And then we go hunt. After the hunt's over, we're going to show you how to clean these game animals. We need to take them to the processor. We'll take them to the processor. If you financially can't afford to pay for the processing of a deer or something, we have means to figure that out for you. So don't let anything be an excuse, roadblock to not get your kid involved in the outdoors. It's all free, and we pretty much run all through from September all the way through turkey season, which ends in May. And then in the summertime, we do a lot of recruiting events where we go to different festivals, and we recruit new youth. We have a trailer that we pull around. There's four of those in the state, and then we have one large one that's pulled with a wrecker-style truck. And they're like little museums. They got deer heads and turkeys and, wildlife that we hunt and some fish in them. And they're basically this educational trailer, story of our conservation here in South Carolina. And it basically is an opportunity for us to talk to people so they can come up and ask questions. The game wardens, our field officers, help with these trailers too throughout the state. People see us at the gas station. You don't see game wardens that much. So when people see us, a lot of times they'll come talk to us, ask a question. And at these festivals, it gives them opportunity to
talk to us.
And then we can talk about our programs. But I'm very passionate about what I do for the department. I mean, we have a cool job. I get to drive a camouflage bottomland, which is my spirit animal, mostly oak bottomland. And it's a really cool truck, but it's kind of a billboard advertisement.
Yeah.
so that when I do go places, people say, hey, why is your truck different from everybody else's? So we can talk about
it's a conversation starter.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
So it's a great program, and we don't just take a kid. I think this is the most important part. We don't just take a kid on one hunt and he kills a deer.
And then you're like, all right, good job.
No. We want them to stay in our program basically until they graduate high school. Or if their family starts hunting, the point of our program is to create future hunters, future licensed buyers, and people to enjoy the outdoors that we have. That's what our whole deal is. That's what I have a job for. So we hope that if the kid loves it, maybe the parent will start hunting, fishing, and start going with them. Once they start seeing how much fun they're having out here, a lot of times that happens. So we have families that have been in our program that were non-hunters, husband, wife, two or three kids. They get in our program. Now mom, dad hunts, brother, sister, both brother, sister hunts.
And I was going to say, nowadays, it is such a good thing for youth especially to be cut off from their electronics for a couple hours. You know
exactly.
What I mean? I mean, it's got to be way more than just hunting. I mean, it's got to be really good for peace of mind.
It is. The big thing we try to also, we're not just going out there just to kill a dove or kill a deer.
Right.
When they come to these properties that we get to go to, some are owned by the state. A lot of them are private landowners that say, hey, we want you to come out here and enjoy our property. So we bounce around different plantations and farms all over the state. All of us do every Saturday. We're all different places. While they're there, they get to see how nice this property is and how it's maintained, and then we get to have an opportunity to talk about why it looks like this, why this food plot's planted in this, why this dove field's planted in this crop,
yeah,
why these trees look the way they do. The conservation and the game management part of it is a big part of hunting. And as you get older, like I am now, that part is really more fun. Planting food plots and planting trees and watching that grow and watching animals come and eat it, stuff that you planted means a whole lot more to me than just going out and shooting a deer.
Yeah.
And most people that get into hunting after a while, that's kind of where they go to. They just want to leave it better than we found it.
Okay. That makes sense.
And the kids really get it too. I think they realize, they can see how nice these properties are and they see what it takes and the work that goes in to be able to, you don't just get to wake up in October and go sit on a beautiful food plot and deer come out.
And you can look through throughout history, not to say it's any different for girls, but hunting was like a passage to manhood.
Right.
And womanhood, know. But like it was a rite of passage. Like, you see these movies, people went hunting and they come back a man,
Right.
And it's good for development. Cause you learn a lot of respect for nature and
definitely.
And when you're out there and you got a dangerous weapon and there's dangerous things out there and your control, you learn a lot of mental stuff too. I think it's
for
good
sure.
for development. And it's really cool that you're doing that So especially for people who aren't even that aren't aware of that,
right.
that are non-hunters. It's a good thing.
Yep. I mean, I was fortunate to grow up in the environment I grew up in with my grandfather hunting, my grandfathers and my dad, and a bunch of older gentlemen that were in my hunt club. When I got to join the hunt clubs, I got older, and that just taught me a lot of stuff. But so, like I said, these kids don't have that opportunity in their life, and they're stuck behind a video game or whatever they're doing. This gets them out, and that's why I also like that it starts at 12 because. Some people may be offended by this, but I like for kids to be a little bit older before they start that. I think because there's a little bit of maturity level there before they start taking the life of something. Sometimes I think it's important
to
understand a little bit more what we're doing. And what I've noticed with the kids that I've been dealing with for the past 10 years, we've had some great kids come through our program, and it's been a recruiting tool because now a lot of these kids are now in college. And they want to be game wardens. They want to be biologists. And I really feel like it's because of our programs.
That's great. So I mean, because you're really, I mean, honestly, like I said, dude, that is a big deal. You're helping people along the way.
And that means a lot to me. I feel like we're teaching them gun safety. We're teaching them responsibility. We're teaching them how to cook. Sometimes at our clinics, we're teaching them, you know, respect for animals, respect for nature.
Yeah.
And to encourage them to go find a job is my biggest thing is find a career. You know, when you're young, you don't really know what you want to do. You don't have to be a game warden or biologist or anything, but figure out what you really like to do. And everybody says that, and it may sound kind of cliche, but I can definitely say that I did that.
Yeah,
and
set goals.
If I did it, set some goals. If I did it, I can promise anybody can do it because I'm just a, you know, just average person.
You got the coolest job, and you're changing lives of the youth.
Right. I mean, the Lord has blessed me. There's no doubt. I'm definitely very thankful for the job that I have and the connections that I've made in my life with people. But it's very rewarding to me to see these young people. Some of them don't have, you know, father figures in their life. Some of them do, but some of them don't. And then it kind of gives them not that I'm somebody to look up to, but a lot of the people that we have that sit with these youth, they have to pass a background check.
Yeah.
We have ladies that sit with our young ladies in our program. We have a lot of girls in our program. And so we have women that sit with the girls, guys sit with the guys. And even just sitting in a deer stand, we can talk about school, we can talk about whatever, and these are all good people that they're sitting with that are good people.
High-integrity people.
Exactly. You know, good people in our community here. And all over the state, we have volunteers. We're very dependent on volunteers that help us. Yeah. We have every hunt we have somebody with each youth, and they're good people.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. It's like, is there like a group of you? Because you were saying how – you've got certain people for certain sectors. I mean, when you're meeting with them, is there several of you?
Several of us. So when I go to a farm, I may take a couple of my buddies with me that are mentors. Mm-hmm. Mr. Alan Abernathy here in the Clover community that most people know around here is a great man. Him and his daddy, Mr. Bobby Afford, they helped me out a lot around here. A lot of other of my friends that I grew up with, I get to come and help me on some local hunts.
Yeah.
So each one of us as coordinators, we have a group of people at different locations that we travel to, and we pull. If we go to one farm, we got some people, some guys that hunt or girls that hunt live in that area. We'll pull them. Hey, can y'all come help us Saturday? And we plan all this stuff throughout the year, so everybody kind of knows months out where we're going to be coming here on October 12th or whatever.
Man, so, it's got a busy schedule.
It's a lot. I mean, that's what during the week is a whole lot of coordinating and planning and getting everything ready. I've got a hunt this weekend in Marion County, and the other three coordinators have. They've got hunts in other parts of the state this weekend. So we're all kind of – we've got a big pool of kids that we pull from. So we get together, you know, and figure out which kids are going with who. We communicate with the parents, make sure, hey, they've got the hunt plan.
So you're taking a couple at a time?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it may be as small as three. Sometimes it may be 10, just depending on how many the property can withstand. You know, turkey hunts, we take probably the least amount on a hunt because turkey hunting, you need more area to hunt, to walk around on. Deer hunts, we can have more youth on deer hunts.
Yeah.
Depending on how big the property is. And then on dove hunts, we may have 15 kids on a dove hunt.
Well, turkeys are crazy, ain't they?
They are.
Man, I'm going to tell you one time, I was driving down the road. This turkey's out in the middle of the road. And it just stopped me. I mean, it stopped me. And I'm like, what the heck? So I'm trying to like go a little bit. And then it came up to my side of my window over here, and I'm like, what the heck? And then I start going a little bit, and then it's like, it's flapping. I thought somehow it got hung up in my tire.
Right.
So I freak out. I get out of the car. I walk around to the front of it, and like a velociraptor, it's coming at me. I run and jump back in my car. I'm like, this is crazy. It's up in my window. Like,
they do that. I don't really know what happens to the gobbler, to the male gobbler when they go crazy. We had two in Clover right at Jim McCarter. The church, right? If you come to Jim McCarter 321 is a church. There was two gobblers there like 10, 12 years ago that were attacking everybody that came out of church. And, you know, that's happened a few times. One at Spring Lake Golf Course, it was just chasing people around. There was one at a dentist office in Rock Hill that wouldn't quit jumping on all these ladies' cars that worked there.
Oh, my goodness, dude.
So, I mean, when that happens, we try to catch the animal, relocate it somewhere or whatever, but it's, you know, I don't know what happens to them, but kind of like bucks, sometimes deer, they go a little bit crazy this time of year in the rut, what you call when they're chasing, their testosterone levels are up.
Mm-hmm.
Turkeys kind of do the same thing. They just get a little bit crazy. Some of them are a little wilder than others, I guess.
Yeah, boy, I'm telling you, they turn into a dinosaur.
No kidding, and they do look like dinosaurs. They remind me of dinosaurs. I mean, their heads change colors. I mean, fascinate me. Their heads change colors and right before your eyes. And that's my favorite thing to hunt is a wild turkey. I mean, it's,
I haven't done much turkey. I've never shot a turkey.
It's a lot of fun, man. It's a cat and mouse game. You get to hear them gobble. Springtime, the woods are pretty. Birds are chirping. I mean, it's probably the best time to be in the woods and just watch the world wake up in the dark.
Yeah.
With the owls hooting and the birds start and the turkey starts gobbling. And it feels like you're having a conversation with this animal, which is cool because you don't really get to do that with too many other things that you hunt besides elk. Or, you know, some other things you call in, but turkey hunting is a very unique experience.
Yeah.
Even if you don't harvest a bird, which most of the time you don't. Most of the time they make you look like a fool and you don't get to kill one. But that's what's so cool and challenging about it, and you just get to go, and then you know, I'm kind of a nut, but I'll lay awake at night, you know, not being able to sleep, worrying about what's this gobbler going to do tomorrow.
And
a lot of turkey hunters are like that. It's a very addictive sport, I think.
I mean, so, I've heard a lot about it now. And I believe you.
With social media, it's getting way more popular than I think it used to be, you know. Yeah. But it is a lot of fun. I mean, I definitely encourage people to go, you know, give it a try. But
now that I found out I really, really, really like smoked turkey, I wasn't a big turkey guy for a long time. And once I started making my own Thanksgiving turkey, and I smoked one of them things, boy,
I'm telling you. You got to get your own turkey now.
Yeah, I get my own turkey now. I'll do it up. But, you know, I did a lot of deer hunting. I was thinking about being a youth when I shot my first deer. Now,
how old were you? You remember?
I believe I was 14.
Right.
I believe I was 14. I was hunting before that, but I never shot nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was kind of hunting before that. But it was one morning. It was cold as heck, and I had my daddy's coat on, which was a mistake.
Right.
Super thick coat. I had a lever action Marlin 3030.
Yep.
And I'm on this tree. You see how this table is?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a creek below it, and the tree sits flush with the land up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm down like in a creek, but I climb up a tree and I'm sitting level with the land.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting level with the land, and I believe it was like a 6-point, right?
Right.
I could see the antlers, 3 on this side. I was like, boy, that's it. That's the one.
Right.
And I throw that's it him. Up there, and I blacked my eye.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have it tucked hard enough. There's so much cushion. That thing came back and hit the scope, hit me right in the eye. And I shake it off, and then that deer is running right at me. I'm like, holy moly. And it just jumps and dies right under my stand. I look down, it's missing an antler on one side.
Yeah.
Like a whole antler. But, yeah, that was my first time. I ended up with a black eye. Looked like I sure enough got
Well, let me tell you what's cool about that story right there to me.
Yeah.
You remembered almost every detail of that.
Oh, yeah.
So Michael Waddell said this. I don't want to steal it from him. He's a famous hunter, but you know, you're not going – this is his quote. This is not mine. But you don't remember that flag football game or that ball game or this, that, and other, playing video games with my buddy one day. But you remember that story. Now, Michael Waddell said this. I don't want to be taking credit for his because this is something he pointed out, which is very true. But what it means a lot to me is all these kids over the past 10 years that I've taken on hunts and my group and mentors that sit with other kids on our hunts, those kids are going to remember that hunt just like you remembered your hunt.
Yeah.
And one day when I'm gone, they're going to remember.
Every detail about it. Yep.
Whoever sat with me, that was cool because I remember my first very, very well too. So that means a lot to me too, just passing that on. And
I mean, then you got to realize whatever you talked about, I mean, whatever wisdom or whatever you got a chance to talk about.
That's right.
But coming up to that point is going to be remembered even after.
That's
right. It's going to be remembered. So, I mean, that's a good opportunity to mentor the youth.
It is. I mean, in the stand, I mean, we can talk a little bit and we talk about whatever they got going on. I don't try to get too crazy with things in there, but I mean, if they want to talk, we talk. You know, if they got something going on, we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably good therapy for them, you know, because I mean, I know I got parents, you got parents. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's easier to talk to somebody else about things sometimes than it is to your parents. We're not therapists, but when you're in the woods, something about leaning up against a tree or being out in nature, it's very calming, and I think it's good for your body.
And in a weird kind of way, not even a weird way, I don't know why I said that, but DNR seems like really attached to like what's really going on, like nature.
Not they definitely
government,
are.
Not right. any of that kind of stuff. You're attached to like what's
100%
to nature, you know, not a hippie kind of way. But, yeah. But you got a real grasp on real life, you know.
100%.
So that's somebody you could take some mentor.
You could take and some I mean, people may think I'm crazy for saying this, but have you ever seen the movie Avatar?
Yes.
All right. In my brain, I feel like when I watched that movie and everything was connected, all the plants and everything, everything, something touched something, I believe that is how our woods are 100%.
Yeah.
Because if you just think about it, you walk through the woods now and you just disrupt a squirrel and he starts chattering, now a bird starts making some other noise. I mean, it sends an alarm system through the woods that most people aren't really aware of sometimes. Mm-hmm. But just walking in grass, I mean, it lays over. You can see where things walked, that something walked through here. So I may sound kind of cuckoo for saying that, but I in my brain, I try to go through the woods.
You feel it like a living energy or something.
100%. Yeah. I do, personally. But I might sound crazy on camera.
I mean, if
you've
sat in the woods before and just not shot, seen nothing, you get connected.
Because you do. You're hearing everything.
You're trying to – you become a part of that. So you can – you want to know where that deer is coming from or whatever.
That's it.
But, yeah, you become
a part of that. And once everything gets quiet, you recognize when something alerted and makes a noise. And you think, oh, what's he upset about? What's that crow mad about?
Yeah.
And then you start looking, and all of a sudden, here comes a coyote running through the woods. Well, they just told everybody there's some danger there. You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, so I like to try, as an analogy, I like that's how I picture the woods is Avatar.
Yeah, you kind of look like that guy.
Kidding. That's right. That's my doppelganger. But another thing I wanted to talk about that's very important that I almost forgot is – so we do this stuff with youth, something we started doing about, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 years ago, we started doing these adult learn to hunt clinics. So a lot of adults, you know, we take kids.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, so we got a lot of adults, grown people, college age kids, or, you know, 40, whatever, however old, doesn't matter. We've had 70-year-old women that I've taught stuff at. Adult learn to hunt clinics. And we've basically pretty much just done it with deer. We've done some turkey ones. I think we may have did one duck clinic. On those days for the deer clinic, and we have 3 of those this fall. We've already had one. We've got 2 more coming up. We post these on our website, our Facebook page, rather, SCD and our Facebook page. When we meet, we normally meet around lunchtime. We'll have some type of great lunch that I may have prepared, or one of my cohorts, one of my game warden cohorts, so it might be all right. And we start out very basic. We start out with some deer hunting 101, like a little PowerPoint just about, you know, deer biology and what deer do and habits that they have and kind of how you hunt them and that kind of stuff. Elementary stuff to a non-hunter. Then we go outside. We shoot rifles. If they've never shot a rifle before, we're going to sit down in range. They're going to shoot a rifle, bolt-action rifles with scopes on them, and until everybody's comfortable with that. Then we go over some tree stands. We'll put a climber on the tree, show them how to operate a climbing tree stand, put a ladder stand up, ground blind, just sitting on the ground, whatever, various types of hunting. And the safety part of that, wearing the safety harnesses and show them how all those work, lifelines and stuff. Then sometimes we do like a little cooking segment. If we have time, we'll do a little cooking part. We do a little blood trailing part. This part's pretty cool. We take some vampire blood, or we make our own blood.
Really?
Really hard to catch a vampire and get the blood. That's the hard part.
Yeah.
But we get Halloween's a good time to stock up on my deer clinic blood. Yeah. So we get some blood, and we create a little, like maybe a scrape and a rub, and then we make up a little mock story that we shot a deer here, and we get the whole group, whoever's in our class there, and we'll get in a single file line. And we'll track this blood that I've laid out, or one of our workers, you know, we all work together as a team here. One of us has set the trail.
I swear that is one of my favorite parts.
It is. It's the second hunt.
Yeah.
I mean, that part is just as exciting, and there's a lot of emotional highs and lows.
Yeah. I mean, it is high stress, but when you get to the end of it, it's
incredible.
Rewarding.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I get to experience that every single Saturday, a lot of times with new hunters. And this past Saturday we did, and I found the deer. I was ahead of them. I tried to keep them back at my last blood, and I was like, all right, y'all stay here. I'll go to the next one. And I see the deer. So this young man, he was so excited, but he was a little bit worried that we're not going to find it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I said, Zach, hey, come here, man. Look, come up here. I want to show you something. He comes up here. I'm like, what's that right there? You know, and man, him and his dad both just super excited.
Wow.
And it's a special moment that I know they're not going to forget, like I just said.
Right.
Because they were excited. They're in the stand. Mm-hmm. They shoot a deer. The deer runs off, which they typically do. So now they're not sure what's going to happen. Then they wait. I get there. We find the deer. So that part is cool. So we go over that step, and there's a lot of strategery, I guess, as Will Ferrell would say, in tracking deer. You know, you don't want to go in too fast. There's a whole lot of different, you know, you got to be careful. So we try to teach a couple. You can't teach all that in 5 minutes, but mm-hmm. we try to go over that a little bit, the importance of slowing down and looking for blood before you move on. So we do that part, and then we have like a 3D deer target that we have laying there that they get to find on the deer plant.
Yeah.
Now, these are adults, you know, but it's all fun. We all take our picture with a deer or whatever. So then that afternoon, we put all these adults in a deer stand.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to hunt with us. You know, we all got mentors. We got ladies with our ladies and guys with the guys. And a lot of times, man, these people, first time hunting, we go to some pretty nice places. They get to shoot a deer their first day in the stand, which took me a bunch of times going for it, like you had to go a couple times. So that's
seasons,
really,
probably.
Yes, same season. For me. I don't think it was my second season, but before I did.
Yeah.
And so those have been a big hit, man. I mean, these people are adults that don't, you know, got, you know, it's hard to break into the hunting industry if you don't know anything about hunting, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like it's hard. It'd probably be harder than I don't play golf. But if I want to play golf tomorrow, I could probably go buy some clubs at Academy, mm-hmm. go to Spring Lake, hire a golf instructor or whatever, mm-hmm. and probably get it figured out. It's a little harder to do that with hunting.
Yeah.
People are picky on who they let get on their property. It connections you have to make in order just to get permission to hunt properties, or even to join hunting clubs. There's a lot of
ethics.
A lot of stuff going on there
before
you can even do that. So what we hope to do is let them give them enough information to where after this they could possibly go out on WMA, buy mm-hmm. a WMA permit,
mm-hmm.
go climb a tree. We've showed them how to operate everything. They get opportunity to use the climber or whatever. So maybe they could actually go hunting on their own because we mm-hmm. do have property available for anybody to go on.
Yeah.
So those have been great.
So how is the WMA land managed?
So as far as it's managed by those technicians I was talking about. So they're going to plant food plots. Some WMAs don't have any food plots on them, but some of them do have food plots. We have a state forester that works for our department. He's going to manage the timber on all of our property too. A lot of the properties in WMA is managed by the U.S. Forest Service. And our department just kind of, I guess it'd be, we kind of lease the WMA where the public can go and hunt it.
Yeah.
So, but those properties are, some of them are more specific and have different rules than like the Sumter National Forest, a little more open. And then we have in this book here, which is very important if you are a hunter.
That's it.
This is where you need to get your information. Don't get your information from Facebook, from mm-hmm. somebody on I'm not going to mention a site on Facebook, but don't just ask some random person, you know, a question just because they got camouflage on at Walmart. Don't ask them,
right?
Hey, what can I do here? Look in the rules and regulations. While we have it, it's available online on your phone.
Yeah.
Look at it. But look in that book. You can look up our WMAs there and see if there is specific rules for that property for that day that you want to go hunting or a different species you may not be able to hunt that day.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them have different rules, so you need to look at them.
So that's what I was kind of. How is the game managed? Like,
I see what you're saying. I got you.
So like, I know there's like tags and stuff for different things. How is that all figured out? Because sometimes people are like, we need to get rid of more deer, or we need to slow down on that. And
so we have our head biologist is Charles Roos, so he kind of comes up with what our deer herd number is, and along with our politicians also come up with a lot of the regulations and the rules that we have. So based on hopefully the advisement of our head biologist.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So once as a licensed hunter here in South Carolina, if I'm a resident, if you buy a big game hunting license and you buy a state hunting license, you are going to get a base set of tags issued to you. That's going to be 3 buck tags and 2 doe tags. And those would be 3 any size buck tags. So it could be a spike, 4-pointer, 10-pointer, whatever.
Any size.
Three,
okay.
On any size on those 3. This is your base set of tags, and you got 2 doe tags.
Mm-hmm.
If you, as a resident, want to buy some extra tags, you could buy 4 extra doe tags for $5 a piece, and you could buy 2 more extra buck tags that are antler-restrictive tags, and they've got to be 12 inches wide or 4 on one side. So if you buy, that's where it gets complicated, if you buy those 4 extra doe tags, we give you 2 extra bonus tags to use, just to use on private land. So you could potentially, as a deer hunter, have 13 tags if you want to spend $5 times 4, 5, 6. So not that much money. You can have, there should be no excuse for you not to have deer tags basically in your backpack.
Right.
So what I recommend a deer hunter do is get your deer tags, get you a backpack or a fanny pack or whatever. Put your tags in a Ziploc bag and stick them in your backpack. And when you go hunting, you got your flashlights, you got all your equipment in this backpack so that you don't get to your deer and be like, oh, man, I left my deer tags at the house.
Yeah.
Because guess what? Now you're in violation. You got to have your deer tags in possession. You got to tag it at point of kill.
Mm-hmm.
You got to notch it date and month where you, if you killed it. And if it's on WMA, you got to put that too. And then also, before you take it to the processor, before you process it at your house, you have to get on your phone, and we have an app on there, South Carolina Go Outdoors, free to download. You download that app, and you click on, you create your account with your login information, your name and email and all that good stuff. You're going to click Game Check. Very simple to do. And then you click, you'll be looking at your picture of tags. Your tags are going to pop up on the screen, what you're looking at on your, in your hands, going to be on your phone. You click doe deer, click it. It's going to, you go through, answer a couple questions, killed in the morning, killed in the evening. You hit okay. It's going to give you a confirmation number.
Mm-hmm.
That confirmation number is what you're supposed to have before you go to processor. I recommend just screenshotting that. It's also going to send you an email.
Mm-hmm.
If your email's not set up, you're never going to see it again. So that's why I would recommend screenshotting it. So, if your youth is under 16 years old, they are not required to have a hunting license. So, but they do have to have deer tags and turkey tags. Or if they bear hunt, they got to have a bear tag. We don't have bear season here. So you don't have to worry about that here. But in different parts of the state, we have bear season in the mountains and at the coast.
Oh, really?
Yep. Black bears. So,
hey, I kind of want to, I like to go after a predator.
So in the mountains, they typically hunt them with dogs usually.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a bear hunter, but, and then in the, on the coastal area, it's only open for a short season, and it actually closes, what's today? It closes today. Right now, it's closed, 23rd, because there's a certain number that our biologists, like you were talking about, recommend that you could kill in that game zone in those counties. And every time a bear hunter harvests a bear, he has to check it in. Once that quota is met, then we put out an email that they put out yesterday and a Facebook post and says, as of tomorrow, the bear season in these counties is closed.
Wow.
So
that's neat that they do it on the phone.
Yeah. But with the deer, we have a lot of deer here in South Carolina. So with the deer, with all those tags, as long as everything's getting checked in, people still seeing deer. I mean, the deer pretty much, you know, they're pretty good at doing their thing.
And
we got a bunch more.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of deer every year. We don't have to worry about those much. Turkeys are a little bit more volatile. Different things can affect their recruitment with weather and just all kinds of different things. They're just a little bit more volatile to not have a good hatch every year based on different factors. So that can vary. And right now you can only harvest 2 birds in South Carolina. And you cannot harvest a jake, which is an immature gobbler. So, but the main thing is, as a hunter, it's your responsibility to know what the rules are where you're hunting at. And like I said, don't base it on what your buddy told you at work or what you heard on social media.
Yeah.
If you have a question about in a county that you're going to go hunting in, if I'm going to go to Chesterfield County tomorrow and hunt, You can call our dispatch number, which is in our rules and regs, easy to find on the phone, too. It's 1-800-922-5431. That's Operation Game Theft. That's also our dispatch number. You call that number. You ask for an officer in Chesterfield County, York County, to give you a call. Our dispatch is then going to send a page to that officer, whoever's on call, whoever's working. Then they're going to call you, and they're going to say, hey, what's your question? And you say, you know, hey, I'm going to be hunting Draper WMA tomorrow. Is it okay if blah, 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 whatever your question is. That way you know and you heard it directly from an officer that's going to be checking you. And it's really simple to do that.
Yeah.
If you can't first look in the book, see what you can find in the book. If you can't find what you need to know there, then call the officer. Now, don't call at 11 o'clock at night to ask if squirrel season opens tomorrow, you know. You know what I mean. But it's very easy to get the information that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And I would recommend, even if I'm going to go out of state and hunt somewhere, I want to talk to an officer in that state,
mm-hmm.
make sure that I'm going to have everything I
actually
need.
Made a similar call when I was in New York looking for the right place to fish.
Right.
So there was a gate up, and it was all kind of
confusing.
Yeah. So I actually made a phone call, and I was allowed to walk around the gate and stuff like that.
But
so.
You did the right thing. Yeah. You called.
Yeah.
Because sure as you didn't.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not getting in.
Yeah, it could have been a spot where you're not supposed to walk because I had the gate shut.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff that's important to do, because once you're in violation and an officer comes up on you, I mean, you know, you at that point, it is what it is. Unfortunately, sometimes. So,
But Mark, I think we could close it right there.
Okay, all right, cool. Yeah, I don't want to talk ears off. All right.
No, that was a great closing right there.
Well, listen, I appreciate that you having us on.
Yep.
And remember, anybody still listening, if you got a youth or know a youth that wants to go hunting, reach out to us, take them, make them program. Thank you for having me. Yes, sir.
Late night on a vacay, it's beast, so I'm heading to the room. A Nelly playing in the background, now the boys to give it to you too. We pick the spot with the crowd, we grab a few drinks and we hit the floor. A shorty popped up, grabbed me by the shirt and said, "Is she want some more?" And I said, "And this she is, swinging my hands, singing and dancing, saying you the man." And this she was, now I got her hooked, asking about the hotel I booked in. Oh damn, I was reeling her in, she said, "Oh my life, boy, where you been?" She is.